Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vishnu Shom. On the programme tonight, 50,000 new COVID cases in Karnataka. The positivity rate crosses 30%. There are 23,000 new cases in Bengaluru with 7,000 deaths in this round. The big question, will there be a new extended and more stringent lockdown across the state? What exactly is anybody waiting for? This comes at a time when citizens, like in Delhi presently and in Mumbai earlier, citizens in Bengaluru are increasingly having to struggle for hospital beds and tests and oxygen sometimes. Tonight, leading doctors, experts on the spread of the virus in Karnataka and also those suffering as a result of the faltering healthcare situation. Also on the show tonight, responding to the call of the government, young final year medical students get set to go for COVID duty. These are our new soldiers, real heroes. They're just kids, but they're going to be in COVID wards and they're going to be saving lives. But first, all of this comes on a day in which the news, I'm afraid, is not good as far as COVID is concerned, with the principal scientific advisor to the government saying that a third phase of COVID is inevitable. Remember, we're just in the second phase. We've seen these record number of deaths, but now the government saying in a press conference that phase three is inevitable at some stage. They don't know when that's going to happen. And in terms of what you can do to fight it, the rules are still the same. Maintain social distancing, mask up. But if there is a third wave, then India, some would suggest, would be in real trouble in finding a way to fight it, given that we are struggling right now. Also, the India mutant, it's a double mutant variant. You've heard about it. People have been talking about it for 2 months. There's been overwhelming clinical evidence on the ground to suggest that there is a new variant which is causing the surge. The government now has confirmed that. The government in its press conference today said, and I quote, "The current surge in some states shows that, in fact, this particular variant could be responsible." But we're going to look now at the situation in Karnataka, which is getting fairly challenging, desperate, some would say, at this stage. I'm joined by Dr. Ravindra Mehta, Chief of Pulmonology at Apollo Hospitals. Dr. Vishal Rao also joins us. He's a member of the expert committee of the COVID task force in the government of Karnataka. Dr. Vishal Rao, let me come to you first. We're also, in fact, joined at this stage by Danish Sheikh, who has gone through hell in trying to organize and to help his loved ones in this particular scenario. Dr. Vishal Rao, let me come to you first. Do you believe there needs to be an extension of the curfew, which we've seen in Karnataka? Do you believe there needs to be a statewide lockdown, which is much stricter? All right, we've lost that line.
Vishnu, yeah, go ahead. First of all, thank you for inviting me over.
Yeah, go ahead.
Vishnu, I personally believe that this is the right time for us to strengthen our act together. And, you know, we've earlier been maintaining this is a socio-economic virus, and this virus is going to spread more the more we increase our social and economic activities. And every socio-economic zone will need to run like a clinic or an OPD. Now, at this juncture, naturally, our numbers are staggeringly high. And the only way to break the chain is to kind of curb the social activities. But having said that, one needs to understand lockdown is not a treatment for COVID. It's a time for us to prepare. Mm. Prepare for your beds, prepare for oxygen, prepare for manpower. But beyond that, lockdown is going to further strangle the economy. So it has to be very judiciously used for short periods for preparation. And during this period, we need to enhance the responsibility and reduce complacency, improve volunteerism among people so that we are able to save lives. And this has to be done through mass indoor ventilation, outdoor ventilations, through social distancing, through hand hygiene. But otherwise, other than this, the only other mantra is vaccination. And I think that is what the committee has been advocating all through.
Dr. Rao, you know, we've got the government today on record saying that the double mutant is now responsible for the surge, at least to a large extent. Perhaps along with the UK strain earlier on, but they're talking about it openly now. The question which a lot of people would ask is, at this juncture, do we know if Covaxin or Covishield are as effective against this particular strain?
So if you're looking at global data on this, and it's quite worrisome because all of these vaccines have been authorized under emergency authorization and are primarily not defined for this variant. But having said that, we are definitely seeing that from data coming from globally, that if you're vaccinated, you are definitely getting at least partial protection. So there is no doubt that vaccines are effective, if not complete, but definitely there is reduced amount of deaths, there is reduced amount of diseases impact which is seen, and that is a proof of concept for our doctors also who are currently our frontline workers. So
Sure.
what we are definitely also knowing is that the double mutant is more aggressive, it is 60% more transmissible, 50% more lethal. And this is what I think they call tachyphylaxis, or in medicine, that if something does not kill you, it makes you stronger. And that is what we are seeing with this virus, that it keeps seeming to get stronger by the wave. And
Dr. Rao, on
what
what
we have
basis do you
been.
say that it's 50% more lethal?
So if you see the studies that have been done, and there are some very good publications that are out there, which have shown that mortality in some states have gone even up to 3.9. I think the concern here is if you between the first wave to the second wave, there is a difference between population-based mortality and hospital-based mortality. Hospital-based mortality, when deaths are happening in the hospital, seems to be significantly higher this time. And I
Right.
think Dr. Ravi can throw more light on it, but it's an obvious fact in every hospital that the deaths are higher during this period. That for us is the greater concern in the second wave. And we also know with the current consequence, and because in the first wave, our learning was 100 years back, 1918. But this time, our learning is from the last year. And from the last year, we knew that the first assumption we did wrongly was we said India is different from UK, which is different from USA. Then we said Karnataka is different from Kerala, which is different from Maharashtra and Delhi. Now we know that it's not about our denominator of immune system. The virus has its own way in which it is expanding itself through mutations.
Right.
And there are definite number of mutations that Karnataka or India has identified. And there needs to be more amount of genetic surveillance. And that's what I've been advocating for, to say that let us not be taken by the blind side. Let us proactively look at mapping the genome. Like UK is talking about genomic surveillance, epidemiologic genomic surveillance. We will need to ramp up our game to monitor the new mutations more proactively.
No, absolutely. And unless we do that, we won't get behind the science. At all, the
Absolutely.
spread, the impact, the on-the-ground situation, and obviously it all leads
Vishnu,
up to whether the drugs we have actually work or not. Absolutely, I
I
take that
want to
point.
just add a point.
Yeah, quickly
I
before I
just
go to
want
my
to
other
add one
panelists.
final
Yeah.
point, that we are talking today, we earlier talked about three T's, the trace, test, and treat, but we have to add two more of teamwork and training. And training for me is going to be a big concern, because like what you're talking today, a lack of doctors coming in, but these doctors are not the experienced
No,
ones.
they
It's
aren't.
going to take a lot of pressure on the machinery of the existing system to train these doctors and get them ready. And I think that's something that we all need to together make arrangements for, because it's just not about plug and play, but also about acclimatizing them into this situation.
All right. I want to go across to Dr. Ravinder Mehta, who is back with us. Dr. Mehta, how do we have him? We don't have him as yet. I want to therefore go across to Danish Sheikh. Danish, this morning you contacted over 40 hospitals to try and
Yeah,
help
that's
for a
right.
friend. Could you tell us
Yeah.
what resulted after that huge search?
Even after contacting more than 40 hospitals, all the helplines that are going around, the government helplines, the BBMP helpline here, the local helpline 1912, we still have not got a bed. My manager's mum, she has her oxygen levels are like 70 with oxygen. The ground reality here is really different. I've been struggling for the last 2 weeks to try and get beds, to try and arrange oxygen. It's hard to speak because the ground realities here are totally different. Even for a bed, we have to struggle a lot. I contacted almost all the major hospitals here, like Manipal, Apollo, Maligarh, and I don't even remember the number of hospitals I have contacted, but unfortunately, we still could not get a bed. That's the ground reality here.
What is the condition of the patient?
She's still on oxygen support. I'm afraid if we remove her, fortunately, they have a concentrator which is helping them. But think about patients who cannot afford all that. Think about the people on the streets there.
No, it's a hopeless situation, and it's exactly like what it is.
It is a hopeless situation.
In Delhi presently. Dr. Mehta, we've got the line back with you. How is this really the next front as far as Mumbai is concerned, Bengaluru is concerned? You know, what we are going through here in Delhi is hell. You may know the entire world, you won't get anybody into a hospital. Are you headed to that situation in Bengaluru now?
Yes, we're very concerned about that, Vishnu, because currently it's been around 8 or 9 days since our near the lockdown, you know, the near lockdown, and we're still peaking away. So usually when you look at the cycle, usually require around 15 days for things to come under control. You know, the first lot infects the second lot and a 7 to 10 day cycle goes. So we're still zipping ahead. The problem is you hope that your supplies and your infrastructure last till you wear out the virus. And that's not happening right now. We're still struggling for oxygen. Daily reports of oxygen shortage. Today, we are struggling for equipment now. Ventilators, non-invasive ventilators, oxygen cannulae. So every little disposable to massive equipment to bed is now slowly dwindling out. We really have to get over this and get more preparation going. Otherwise, I think we're just going to head your way. And that's not something we're looking forward to.
Dr. Rao, at this rate, when will Bengaluru be at that same situation which we face in Delhi today?
So I think, you know, if you look at the three most important things that we are needing today, the beds, oxygen and manpower, every day on an average, we are adding 50,000 cases, of which let's assume that 7 to 10% of them require beds in terms of oxygen. And that's what other states are looking like. Even then, you're looking at an average of about 4,000 to 5,000 patients who require beds, which is not easy. And I must tell you, the state government for that has set up some other preparation. For example, they created a step-down hospital. Now, the step-down hospital measure that has been done is a place wherein the hotel collaborates with the hospital and ramps up the bed, wherein the step-down hospital is a hotel which is given cover by a hospital, wherein makeshift oxygen is made available until a bed is vacant.
Right.
Now, this has been a Herculean task for the government, and naturally, there is a lot of hesitation among hotels on how do we convert itself from hospitality into a hospital.
Correct.
It's going to be a tedious task, and there needs to be a lot of backing that needs to be given by the government, because people are concerned about what if there is a death? How do we manage it? Where do I get the nurses from? How do I keep doctors there? So we are trying to grapple with this to understand, and how do we give them a workable model. You know, theoretically, a lot is possible when we sit in committees and we discuss this and that. But practically, if you have to pull this off the ground, how are we going to do it? So we are working with a couple of hotels to see how can we assist them in a collaborative way by which government also backs these people to say, let's do this, let's ramp up the beds, let's make makeshift beds in which people can be given oxygen and cohesively work towards solving this in terms of understanding it. That's one aspect. The other aspect, I think, is the battling of oxygen shortage. So if your need is at about 1500 metric ton, you are getting 800 allocation. So naturally, every hospital is asking for its ounce of oxygen. I think just today morning when me and Dr. Mehta were speaking, you know, he has come out with a very nice algorithm on how to save oxygen. Every hospital needs to be using oxygen very judiciously. You will need to maintain your oxygen levels at 90-92%. You will need to prevent central leakages. You will need to work on preventing usage of high flow oxygen. So there are a lot of protocols that I think Dr. Ravi Mehta's team has worked very hard on. And there are our state government committee has given a lot of relevant suggestions on it. We will need to conserve oxygen in the next coming days, because the average hospital requires double or triple of its necessity, because almost all of the beds are right now COVID beds asking for oxygen.
All right. But I'd like to thank all of you very much for being with us. Hopefully that situation in Bengaluru is going to be sorted very, very soon indeed. Well, in a situation like this, one of the biggest concerns is our doctors, our medical staff falling unwell. And given the nature of the infection, given its transmissibility, and in fact, unfortunately, its mortality evidently as well, it's clear that more health workers are needed. The government has now reached out to young final year doctors, doctors who are interns or final year students, who across the country are our rail soldiers. We're going to try and speak to a few of them. Joining us now, Mahesh Dangi, an intern at the All India Institute of Medical Sciences at Raipur. Mahesh, thank you so much for being with us. You know, you're a young doctor yourself. Being pushed into this situation, being pushed into COVID wards, is it a challenge that you accept? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we already accepted the challenge because we are working from last 1 year. In AIIMS Raipur, we are posted from last 1 year in the COVID. We are helping our colleagues or faculties. They're normally getting positive. The rate is in Chhattisgarh now. The issue is that the positive rate is increased. Now we can say that the interns are working very hard and the faculties, and anyway, the government decision to add the more other institute also to include the interns, yeah, final year students to join them is a very good initiative. Okay. Anyway, we can't say, anyway, there is a third wave also. As per the scientific advisor today released that press statement, there will be third wave also.
Right.
It's inevitable. It's a good thing. They should have to include them.
Okay.
It's a time to include them. In our hospital, our directors are included in the last year only. So it's helping. AIIMS Raipur is working very well
right
in this situation.
Sure. I'm joined by Mehak Agarwal, a COVID ward consultant. Thank you, Mehak, very much for being with us. You're so young in this field. You're so new to this field. This could be your biggest challenge. Are you ready for it?
Yes, I'm ready and I'm already at work. I am right now in my final year of MBBS. And I'm working with Max in their COVID center. I am already there. I have been working about 8 to 9 hour shift every day, Monday to Saturday. And it's a huge step. But as in college, we are trained. From first year, we are trained how to deal with patients, how to have bedside manners. And in the further years, we've been taught about these medications and how they are working and their mechanism of action. So right now, that's coming in hand. We are there on the scene to help our seniors, to help the senior doctors do their job better.
What specifically are you doing? Are you treating the patients? Are you doing administrative work, Mehak? What exactly are you doing?
So right now, in a facility with about 80 to 90 patients, there are only 3 doctors on duty at one time. So we are seeing all the patients. We have to go for rounds in the morning and the evening and one round with our senior consulting doctor. So during these rounds, we have to just measure the vital, just say hello to the patient. During these times, the patients are not seeing the doctors. They're only seeing us in PPE kits and it's difficult for them to connect with them. So just a little voice to them that, hi, I am this and I'm here to take care of you. We are looking after you. We are looking at your vitals. We are seeing how your drug management is happening. And plus that, with administrative work, our nursing staff is overburdened. Just ordering the medication, just entering the vitals and seeing the progression of the patient. With the help of our seniors and our guiding forces, we are trying to help them in any way possible.
Yeah. Dr. Dangi, how is, for a young doctor just getting into the field, to be put into something which is so deeply infectious comes with an incredible set of risks. How do the young doctors that you work with, who are interns, who are being deployed, how do they deal with that, with the knowledge that they're doing something very dangerous?
I mean, basically, in the medical, we should be know about that infectious disease. And it's very common because infectious diseases are very common in a hospital. So basically, we know about that, how to deal with that. And basically, now COVID is normally the recovery rate is very high. We can say recovery rate is very high, 98% good cure. But basically, issue is that the patient, our hospital staffs, they got infected. So we are lack of the hospitals. That's the issues. Patients are recovering. We should inform the patient that they should not be anxious. Their patients are getting cured. They should know.
Okay.
Their infection is there, and we are dealing very well. Our senior faculties, they used to instruct before putting us in COVID duty, they just conducted the classes to how to be there.
Okay, I wanted to go across actually to Yogesh Kumar, who is an MBBS final year at the All India Institute in Raipur. Yogesh, thank you very much for being with us. Have you started treating patients or helping other doctors in the COVID ward? I can see you're in your kit, so I suppose you're already doing rounds.
Yes, sir. Actually, I'm the final student here at AIIMS Raipur, and I personally welcome this decision of deploying MBBS final year students into COVID duty as extra hands to the doctors who are working continuously day and night in this pandemic. In Chhattisgarh, last month only, our CM has decided in the meeting to deploy final year students. So that's why I'm in this in apron. This move is expected to reduce the workload on the existing doctors and nurses who are treating COVID patients right now. Certain prerequisites are to be ensured before deploying the final year students into the hospital.
And Yogesh, tell me, are you also getting a stipend for your duties from the government?
No, sir. Right now, we are not getting any stipend.
Okay.
But yeah, there are certain prerequisites we are to be ensured, like proper training from faculty before deploying the students.
Right.
Only vaccinated students to be deployed.
Right.
And government should ensure health insurance for each of the student and medical faculties, as it will motivate them to participate more and more and offer their duties.
Sure. And Mehak, let me just come to you for a last question from you to you. When you told your parents and you're talking to them or your friends, like, I'm in the COVID ward, and they're barely used to you being a medical worker. They're just getting used to that idea. How did they react?
Well, luckily, both my parents are doctors.
Oh, right. So, and were they more worried as a result?
Yeah, but because of that, they know how many precautions we are taking. They know that we have been training for this. We made this decision coming into MBBS, knowing we'll have to face these things. So they have been a huge help. They have been training me more. They have been teaching me ways how to deal with patients, how to deal with safety precautions. Our college got us vaccinated in the first round. They, when the first wave was around, they got a value-added course added to our course, which taught us about PPE. So because they have been seeing all this, parents being doctors, they know that everyone is taking precaution at the level best.
I'm sure your parents are very proud of you, all of you. And I think all of us in the country are proud of our young doctors who are stepping up to this challenge, which is our greatest healthcare crisis. I'm interrupting you only because there's some very welcome news, and it is related to the All India Institute, where an oxygen-generating plant has in fact been set up. It's a DRDO plant. Let's take a look.
Setting up oxygen plants on a war footing. At Delhi's All India Institute of Medical Sciences, a medical oxygen plant is getting installed and operational within 48 hours. By Thursday, the plant developed by India's Defence Research and Development Organisation can cater to 190 patients at a flow rate of 5 litres per minute and charge 195 cylinders per day.
The first two units have rolled out of the factory and they have come to Delhi yesterday, and today they are being installed in All India Institute of Medical Sciences and RML, and in all probabilities we should be start working tomorrow onwards. The capacity of this oxygen plant is about 1,000 liters per minute.
By the end of the first week of May, 4 more such medical oxygen plants are expected to come up at Ram Manohar Lohia Hospital, Safdarjung Hospital, Lady Harding Medical College, and at AIIMS in Jhajjar, Haryana.
It's a war of a different kind against the virus. Interestingly, the medical oxygen plant technology developed by DRDO is based on the onboard oxygen generation in the light combat aircraft Tejas. Over the next 3 months, PM CARES is expected to fund 500 such oxygen plants across the country.
At Dharamshila Narayana Hospital in Delhi, this oxygen plant, donated by France, has been installed and made operational within a record 18 hours. This can refill 48 cylinders of 40 to 60 liters capacity in 24 hours. The cost of the DRDO developed oxygen plant is between 40 to 80 lakh rupees. and any private hospital can opt to install it. With Rajiv Ranjan and Sharad Sharma in Delhi, Uma Sudhir, NDTV.
Well, that certainly brings hope. Hopefully, there'll be more such plants across all of the hospitals where patients continue, sadly, to gasp for breath.